Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Yellow Dog. Tonight's Dharma talk is coming from Sharon Salzberg, who is one of our very first teachers, from her book, Love and Kindness. And she's known for her teachings and her own practice, lots of retreats, and of metta. And we practice each week a guided meditation called metta. That's an ancient practice. And last week, Holly, is that okay if I say it?
It's fine.
Last week, Holly said, you know, thinking of all the things going on in Israel and with the Hamas and everything, she says, I don't think I can be asked for them to be happy, because one of the statements in the metta is, may all beings be happy. And, you know, she's right. We, our best wishes, when we say happy here in the West, it's different than the happiness in the Buddhist teachings. Happiness is not having a happy time, but happiness is what the Buddha teaches, that all human beings are able to obtain a happiness that is unconditional. It doesn't matter what's going on the outside or the inside. And so we're waking up to that happiness, complete happiness. So it's not the happiness that we think of with our Western minds about, let's go to a party and be happy. But it is wishing all beings to wake up to their true being, where there is complete happiness, complete peacefulness, complete contentment, regardless of what's going on inside or outside of us. So thank you for that, because Holly, because we did realize that we haven't talked about metta before, and we know and recall our own, you know, feedback we had when we started practicing metta. It's quite different from anything we've done in the years, maybe. So, And it's beneficial not only to ourselves, but to all beings. I don't think there's one teacher that hasn't said to me, and I've sat with lots of teachers, that said that the best kindness thing we can do for all people, all beings, is to wake up, is to work on ourselves. And the reason for that is, of course, we're all connected. And we stay connected. So with that interconnection, and even today, science is confirming that, then what we do and what we think and what we say or commune with matters. Why? Because it is, we're connected. We can't disconnect, even if we wanted to. So we're putting our share of life, or whatever you want to call it, our share for everyone. And it happens whether we are happy or whether we are sad or whether we are angry or whether we hate. So we begin to reflect, what do we put out in the universe? And you can see that's a whole paradigm shift that we probably may or may not have considered. But we can lose, and I've seen this in my own self, in my practice, we lose our feelings, these feelings of connection to others, and also compassion for them. And it's difficult when we have not enabled that compassion for ourselves. And again, it's so strange in this culture when we talk about loving oneself and how important that is to not only awakening personally, but to affect the whole universe. I mean, do you think the Dalai Lama has done his share? You know, you can just look at him and my heart opens. You know, he embodies it. And I've sat with several teachers who actually embodies the teachings. That means they're not necessarily practicing, they are the teachings. And that's where supposedly we want to open to that kind of living. So the practice underlines a commitment to the mind state of universal love. And there's some richness in that, of course. And it's personal, it's social. Loving kindness through everything that we do, bodily, verbal, mental activities. So when we inquire, what do we really need to be happy? Sharon Salzberg says, for all of us, love can be the natural state of our own being. Naturally at peace, naturally connected, because this becomes the reflection of who we are. Rua Khan says, if we gain something, it was already there from the beginning. If we lose anything, it's just hidden nearby. So we have everything we need to wake up, not only to be a 100% human being, but to be who we really are when we are finished being human beings. So also the late Hindu guru Neem Karola Baba often said, don't throw anyone out of your heart. Now you might say, well, how about these toxic people that are ruining my life? Well, that's a good, valid question. And I can say in my own relationships, as going through 76 years, there are people that I had to disconnect physically with for a variety of reasons. But those human beings that I had an opportunity to sit down and talk to about why I'm stepping out of the relationship, I said to them, you will never be out of my heart. We never have to take anyone out of our heart, because our heart holds everything. The good, the bad, and the ugly. You mean ugly people? Yeah. That's what the Buddha teaches, that we're capable of that. And with time, and I know you have realized this too, I've seen when people are really suffering, or even when people are enabling a lot of suffering, then sometimes we can reflect on how they get that way. What is the suffering? What is the circumstances that this one human being has gone through in his life for him or her to live with such lack of compassion, such connectedness? It's hell. It's hell on earth. So metta helps us to connect with that kind of compassion. And so I'll read the poem by Gateway Kennel. The bud stands for all things, even for those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on the brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch. It is lovely. Until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. And see how we can connect with that, especially under the umbrella of this particular practice that has such deep, deep wisdom. The wisdom that, you know, the mind says, that doesn't make sense, you know. The mind will say, no. But as we've talked about before, we live in two worlds. We live in the reality, the real, what we call reality of everyday life. And then, in a variety of different ways throughout our lives, we touch that spaciousness. We touch who we really are. And sometimes we don't realize it, and sometimes we don't understand it. But in meditation, that's where it puts us. So to reteach a thing its loveliness, Sharon says, is the nature of metta. Now, when we say these phrases, I know this is something that I went through. It's like, I don't feel love. I'm very irritated, in fact. I've just got a whole sense of irritation. But it doesn't matter, because it reminds even the entity that is practicing it. It is ancient, ancient wisdom. Now, I have enough faith in the practice that I know that on a certain level. But to say to someone who doesn't practice, you know, it just doesn't ring true, and that's fine. But when we begin to recover the knowledge of our own loveliness and that of others, that self-blessing frees us, happens naturally and beautifully. So remember, we've talked about possibilities, and in order for this mind and body to take in some of these precious teachings, we have to be open to possibilities that the mind does not understand. And yet we've spent most of our lives listening to the mind because we didn't understand the nature of the mind. So we just do what the mind tells us until all of a sudden we know what a quiet mind brings us. It opens us to that spaciousness, to that metta, to that compassion, to that connectedness, to that peace. So metta, which can be translated from Pali as love or loving kindness, joy, equanimity, grows out of metta, which supports and extends these states. So it's useful. And I've been through Rindy, through most of his, all of his practice, really. And this was the first thing he, as my teacher, taught me. And I know why. Because he navigates through the heart. He touches my heart. He touches everyone's heart. And so this practice has been so precious to us, and that's why we want to share it with you. And so in our culture, when we talk about love, we usually mean either passion or sentimentality. And it's crucial to distinguish metta from both of these states. Passion is enmeshed with feelings of desires and of wanting and of owning and possessing. And it gets entangled with needing things to be other than they are. And so the expectation of exchange that underlines most of our passion is both conditional and ultimately defeating. I will love you as long as you behave in the following 15 ways. Conditional. It isn't a coincidence that the word passion derives from the Latin word suffering. By contrast, the spirit of metta is unconditional, open, and unobstructed, like water pouring into another vessel. It flows freely. It takes the shape of each situation without changing its essence. So, yeah, friends disappoint us. They may not meet our expectations, but if they're not toxic, we don't stop being a friend because they're as human as the rest of us. They are perfectly imperfect. So there are exceptions when we are leaving anyone who becomes toxic. And I want to make that clear because we know how important that is, and that families in this day and time, along with friends, have some really tough issues. But even when we disappoint ourselves, which we will, because we're perfectly imperfect, we do it wrong. We don't mean to. We want to be the best that we can be. But we still can stay friends with ourselves. That open compassion for ourselves, instead of beating ourselves up or doing what we do to pull ourselves into a tight container, then metta opens us. And so sentimentality, the other mental state, masquerades as love, is really just an ally of delusion. It's a replica of caring that limits itself only to the experience of pleasure. That's what I grew up with in the church of my parents' choice, is I saw a lot of sentiment, a lot of crying, a lot of sentiment. And you know it, you know. Once you know sentiment, you can identify it. And it puts things into what is called soft focus. We cannot see the rough edges, the trouble spots, or the defects. And yet, in this practice, we learn how to accept everything. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Not as victims, because we've got lots of powers. But with that wisdom. So sentiment is just like everything's a little too nice. That's not life. That's not life. Oh, it's wonderful. Oh, it's such a wonderful day. Oh, I'm such a wonderful, you know. You know, you've seen it. You've been with it. So our vision becomes very narrow when we need things to be a certain way. And so that's what our practice does. And denial of anything that is in our life is kind of narcotic, Sharon says. Denial, she says, functions almost like a kind of narcotic, so that vital parts of our lives end up missing. So what are we pushing away in the good, the bad, and the ugly? When we are learning how to take it within and to look at it honestly and hopefully with wisdom, and that possibility of wisdom and setting that intention, the magic happens. So we have to be open to all these possibilities. Don't have to, it's not blind faith. It's not because I said it or the Buddha says it. It just says, this is a possibility. Now you have to find that out for yourself. And so, let me end, because I'm over my time, with the last thing. True Dharma, this is Sharon, is never about escaping a mini nirvana, where we're soaked in a kind of eternal bliss and we don't care about anything because it's all one. I've been in that trap. And so the kind of state of mind is very enticing, yet it's an illusion. What are we cutting out? What are we missing in life? And now we're beginning to learn what to do with all of it. And the truth is, we can never find true freedom until we develop compassion and courage. I feel, Sharon says, that this is a time for all of us to take action, not out of anger or hatred, but out of love. How we do it matters. You said, oops, did that wrong. Well, join the human race. The rest of us do it wrong all the time, but that's how we learn, by doing it wrong, by being able to do it wrong, because it's going to happen. But at least our heart knows, and we know just because we've touched it, because we've enabled ourselves to be quiet and still with a settled mind so that we can begin to touch what's authentic in this life. So, I'm going to stop there. Let me say this. She says, large-scale wars are often the culmination of many individual internal wars. Is that not true? That reflect the inner poisons. Large-scale wars are often the culmination of many individual internal wars that humans have not yet resolved in themselves. So we're one person that's connected to everyone. So, working on ourselves, let me bow to you, is one of the nicest, most compassionate thing you can do for all human beings. And so with that, I truly will stop. And thank you for listening. And we'll have Randy come in.